Hi, everyone. That's so cute. Okay. Everybody had an awesome day so far? Friday at dinner time is the best time to have a talk. No, it won't crash this time. Mostly to spite you, dear. Welcome to I'll Take Mercurial for $100, or Why James is a Cheap Date. Disclaimers. You always got to have the disclaimers off the top. I'm employed. I'd like to stay employed. My boss would be mad, like a boss. Everything I say, you can blame it on whatever you want. Today's Wheel of Fortune has given us non-compliant, cryptographically secure, pseudo-random number generators. You will find these installed at most banks and, well, your house. So I've been at this for a while. Information security specialist for a long time. I've definitely put in the grind. I've worked in pretty much every job slot you can have. Last calculation, I'm sitting in my 134th desk in one decade, which is the consulting life for me. Anybody who's been a consultant knows that you get a desk that's better than the photocopier, you are a great consultant. In the last place I worked, I had a desk that was in the building, so I'm awesome. This is kind of an interesting talk. This is me rambling about crap for an hour. There's very little technical in here. You will lose CPEs as a result of being in this talk. So who writes a one-page abstract and says, so I'm going to talk about stuff? And right there, we've got it. So I'm a guy who has a lot of opinions. Chris Hoff refers to himself as an asshole of the blog. I'm not much farther away from that than he is. I'm a security consultant. I founded a hackerspace, which means I've learned how to herd angry cats. I'm a contributing analyst, which means every now and then you read my opinion and think that it's fact. I'm a columnist, which means I'm sort of a reporter. I'm an InfoSec geek. I am a self-identified and proud hacker. I am a social activist, although if you'd asked me 20 years ago if I was going to grow up to be a social activist, I would have giggled at you. I am an author, I am a speaker, and most of all, I'm a parent, and this is the first time I've had my kids in one of my talks. It's awesome. So you all agreed to sit in here based on reading one paragraph, and like all end user license agreements, your choices are stay or go. This is something that is a major problem in our world, and realize that this could include license terms about your ability to say anything as a result of hearing anything in here. And if you think this is a scary world that we don't yet live in, talk to a lawyer. So, this is a highly structured 70-slide version of what is running through my brain at maximum speed all of the time. I'm one of those people who is proudly lacking in attention. And it's like having a radio tuned to every channel in your head all the time. And there's no way to make the damn thing shut up. So you get to share in that joy for the next hour. Information security is where the money comes from these days, and InfoSec is blowing up, frankly, really, really badly in failing to do plain language stuff. And the reason that I'm going to make this claim, and I'm going to stand by it, is 10 years ago, we were doing exactly the same thing we're doing today. Nothing is any better. There are still breaches like you can't imagine. Last week we had, or was it even this week, we had 3.5 million breached out of the state of Texas. It just keeps going and going and going, almost regardless of how much effort we put into it. And in large part, I think it's because we've created this weird kind of pseudo-mystical priesthood, and we're only a few steps away from being news stories about, you know, violations. I want you to think about information handling. This is one of those things that ends up in the policy documents for every organization. And if you work in a company that has more than five or six people, you've probably signed off that you shall be compliant with the policies of the organization. And no one ever tells you what they really mean when they're talking about information handling. You're supposed to figure it out from 10 pages worth of crap or godforsaken computer-based training for awareness purposes. The reality is that information is toxic waste. As long as you think of it this way, the waste product of thinking, you'll have easy, visceral ways of dealing with it. You'll be able to look at it and say, you know what? That stuff is dangerous. That stuff requires special handling. That stuff is expensive to dispense with. That stuff is something you don't want hanging around. That stuff is something you don't want to keep piled all around your desk. If you imagine, you know, Homer Simpson with his little green bar of whatever the heck that was sliding down the back of his shirt for the last 23 years worth of that show, think about those heaps of paper in your life. Think about the ever larger hard drives. You know, this is the doctor-o-ism. Hard drives are not getting larger, slower, and more expensive. And we're storing more and more cruft, essentially. So this gives you a good way to think about costs, and it gives you a way to talk to your mom about the costs of information storage and what it's like to keep certain kinds of information around for long periods of time. Anybody know the standard four buckets for information classification who isn't also a lawyer? Or sorry, auditor. Sure, give me.
Public, internal, confidential, and sort of super confidential.
Yep. You know what? I strongly disagree that there are four buckets. I think there are actually only two, and the class called other. Everybody understands this is the stuff that we keep in the family, right? We don't share this outside of the household. Most people are taught this from childhood all the way onward. Most people understand, don't tell the kids. And that's really what we mean when we talk about confidential and highly confidential or sensitive. The idea that there's some sort of magical split between information that is for general internal consumption at an organization that has 45,000 employees and information that is public is fantasy. Yeah?
So my question is, if you have the problems with the four different areas of classification, the biggest problem is to figure out what fits into each of the individual
roles. Yep.
So my question here is, don't you kind of have a similar problem as deciding who is family and who are kids?
No. Most people can tell that right away. Okay. All of my coworkers fit into one category alone. There you go. Really, no, it isn't that hard, because you think about your team, or you think about your group, or you think about those people that you interact with regularly if you're doing some sort of, you know, cross-organizational project. That's the in-family. You know, think about it like your family, the people that you have living under the same roof with you that you may or may not love and cherish. Think about it like another kind of family, usually Italian or Japanese. Either way you run that through your head, you're going to find, oh, I know who my family group is. And you're also going to understand who are the people that you can trust to act as an adult and people that you can't trust to act as an adult. And that forms sort of the basis of some really interesting ideas in information security, saying, I'm going to treat you like an adult until you prove to me that you're not. And that's contrary to every single information security policy I've ever written. And I've written a lot of them, over 30. And they all say employees are irresponsible children and shall be treated as such, spanked regularly. And it's not reasonable. How many people think they're really good at understanding risk? Okay. People who play with electrons and propane generally do understand risk. For most organizations, the biggest risk to be concerned about, the second biggest risk to be concerned about, and the third biggest risk to be concerned about. This is so easy to get across to an executive. If you're saying to them, we need to figure out how we're going to fund our information security program, and I'm going to give you a three-part funding formula. And the three-part funding formula is really simple. You're going to give me the money to do, keep you out of an orange jumpsuit, and make sure you don't have to explain to your spouse why you're moving. not that she wouldn't have read it on the front page of the newspaper. We'll negotiate how much money you're willing to spend to not appear foolish in public. Because we have this problem with the cost of reputation, right? I mean, there's the cost of reputation that was experienced by TJX when their stock went up the day after the breach. There's the cost in reputation from, oh, I don't know, a couple months ago I was at a conference and the keynote speaker was the ex-CISO of ChoicePoint. Not somebody I'd put in charge of my information. How about you? So funding becomes an easy thing. When you talk to somebody in these very simple, very visceral terms, you're not talking about legislative risk and regulatory risk and, you know, puppeting away. This keeps going. Every time we complexify something because it makes us feel good to hug the complexity. Yeah?
Is it possible to quantify reputation?
No. Well, Doctorow thinks so, but we're not quite there yet. Although, interestingly enough, in about another 30 slides, I'm going to talk about exactly that. So if you can just sort of stick your finger in the book, we'll get there. Everybody understands locked doors, and everybody who's taken a trip up the flight of stairs knows just how secure most locked doors are. Yeah, there's the lock picks right there. Everybody understands security cameras. How many people have looked at security camera footage from an average convenience store? Yeah, that VHS tape that's been running in that slow-mo recorder for the last, oh, I don't know, 15 years? Not really useful. Rent-a-cops? There's a branch of a bank just around the corner from my house, and without being judgmental, I'm attempting to be very, very kind here, the guard at that bank is a candidate for the Biggest Loser. And I could run in, grab the money and half the employees, a few desks, and the vault before he could chase me out of there. And because we're in Canada, he's not armed. These are interesting ways to talk about controls because it points to the average person, you know, intelligent but otherwise uninformed. It's a great phrase I learned a number of years ago, and it adequately describes the job we're supposed to be doing. Yes?
Is rent-a-cop a deterrent and not a prevention device?
No, it's a mitigation. It means that your prevent and your detect are not functional enough, so you need a human, which is the essence of pretty much every. Yeah, which is, that's essentially the same reason for the locked door or the video camera. It's another layer wrapped around brittle technological controls. So locked doors are really brittle. They're easy to break, whether you're breaking them TJ Hooker style or whether you're breaking them Deviant Dalem style, right? Security cameras, they really don't work that often. Not nearly often enough to be useful. The way that you can do resolution enhancement in NCIS, never done that in the real world. And rent-a-cops vary in value and almost directly according to what you're willing to pay for them. If you're willing to pay $14 an hour, you're not going to get a real good rent-a-cop. If you're willing to pay $45, $50, or $70 an hour, you're going to get a great rent-a-cop. It's a matter of what you're willing to spend on brittle technological controls or medium strength mitigations for technology that doesn't work. User behavior. We need to start rewarding compliance. Most, if not all, information security policy books are based upon walking around with a whack-a-mole hammer and smacking your employees around. This doesn't work with 7-year-old boys. I don't know why it would work with 30-year-old boys. Information security needs to start offering solutions. When somebody says to you, hey, I want to do this completely bat crap crazy thing, your response should be, well, you know what, Fred? That is a brilliant idea. Here's three things that I'd like you to do that would make it safer for all of us. Let's get your idea executed. The fact that it's going to fall flat on its face and Fred's going to look like an idiot is fine. because that's not your problem. You're not the one making the risk-based decision on whether or not Fred should run out and spend however many thousands of dollars implementing his crazy idea. It's on you to make sure that Fred implements it safely. And that's it. So quit decisioning on the part of VPs and CEOs and start decisioning based on facts. And for goodness sake, quit talking about security requirements. Talk about non-functional requirements. Software development folks understand non-functional requirements. In the same way that information security made a horrifying mistake about 15 years ago and called something a security vulnerability. They screwed up. We screwed up. We've been screwing up for 15 years. Security vulnerabilities are software defects. Software development shops have defect management, defect tracking, budgeting for defect repair, a full, complete comprehension of how to cope with defects. Why don't we let them? How many people love process? Swim lanes. Hands up for swim lanes. Woo! I love swim lane diagrams. The marginal cost of perfection. You get a beautiful process that has taken, in one case I can think of, almost 4 months to develop. It's used maybe twice a year. It's 15 pages long, has 4 pages of swim lane diagrams that are recursive, and nobody's really sure where the budget came from for this one. But you know that you've spent the money. My favorite are people who say, well, once we get the tool, we'll design our process to match. Yeah. Yeah, they really do. If you can't do it on paper, you don't get automation. 45 years ago, banks ran on little slips of paper. 35 years ago, when I made my first bank deposit, I used a little slip of paper. The last time I used a little slip of paper was probably when I was well into my 20s. Little slips of paper work. Little slips of paper, little pads, little forms. You can build very big processes out of little slips of paper. And once you've done that, you understand how to move the little slips of paper around. You understand where they pile up. You understand where you need to help them along. You can spend as long as you want on process development. If no one's going to use it, there is no point. You should have just stopped at the beginning and cut your losses. Technology. How many people love blinky lights and shiny things? Yeah. There's really only 3 kinds of security technologies. There's things that enforce policy. There's things that measure an instrument. And there's special weird things. Most organizations have a fairly good handle on policy enforcement. They're not using it correctly. God forbid you should put in an outbound firewall rule. You wouldn't believe how much heck I've taken for outbound firewall rules. Most organizations are getting to the point where they're starting to measure things in a meaningful way. They're actually using the tools that they have deployed. You know, they're looking at NetFlow output. They're looking at IDS output. They're looking at IPS output. They're starting to see what's working and what isn't working. Slowly. Special systems really only need to exist when you have a very special need. So if you need to store large amounts of crypto key material, you probably need a hardware crypto device that stores crypto keys in a safe and secure way. But everything else fits in the first 2 buckets, and you need to not let vendors create new kinds of devices, which are really old devices with a slightly different, well, let's call it what it is, search and replace on the user interface. You need to eat more dog food, all of you. Information security runs entirely on do as I say, not as I do. This has been proven with, oh, I don't know, shall we mention any 3-letter names? Yeah. InfoSec always breaks the rules. It's what we do, right? The first thing we do when we instantiate a new web content management strategy is we exempt ourselves from the whole thing because we need to go to the hacker sites to do the research. So I can't have any of that filtering stuff turned on. We need to stop doing that. We need to stop being jerks, because that's what we appear like. We appear like petulant children. We appear like people who don't understand that the rules apply equally to everyone, unless you've got a really good reason. And frankly, we don't have good reasons. If you want to argue about this or talk about this tomorrow, 3 p.m., it's going to be completely awesome as we social engineer some business into your security. Business terminology. Yeah. That is the non-ironic use of the blink tag. So once upon a time, and far too many people have seen me say this, including I discovered yet another university is using this particular talk, I counseled everyone to learn how to talk like an MBA toting business, something or other, my children are in the audience. I was mostly right. I wasn't entirely right though, because guess what? I'm not an expert and I make lots of mistakes. I love $75 words. My favorite. This comes from spending too much time reading Reader's Digest, the only room in the house in which Reader's Digest has ever read. Use some $2 words. Stop verbing the nouns. Yeah. Nope. I've always covered my ass. This is my favorite line. This happens in every single project conference call I'm on. We're going to need to evaluate your options. What? Everybody's heard this kind of phrase, right? What is the semantic content of this? What are they saying in these kinds of phrases? Paradigm shifting while opening the kimono and going triple net on solutioning the opportunity space for capitalization or early market trailing leads looking for leverage and advantage post Web 2.0.
Where's synergy?
You have to sprinkle the synergy on it. Some of the time you need to be that person to get the job done, but avoid cyber douchery. How many people want to have a career in InfoSec? How many people have a career in InfoSec that they didn't want? Yeah. So I've been going through some career-related struggles. The first one is I've got a job, but it's not going anywhere. I am stuck. The reasons for stuck are many and varied. One of the biggest reasons for stuck, honestly, is you thought that you were a grown-up and thought that you were mature and you have a family. You have people that depend on you, and you can't just take flying leaps because it affects other people besides you. If you end up on the street hungry, that's fine. That's yours. If you put your family out on the street hungry, you're stuck. There's no other way to say it. Dilbert is an optimistic view of average corporate lifestyles. Several of the places that I work have the same sort of incumbency problem that happens in civic politics, where the same people are sitting in the same jobs and have been for the last 20-something years, and no one can really understand what they do or why they're allowed to keep doing it, but they keep doing it, and for some reason exert a level of power over you that is unnatural and certainly unwholesome. I don't actually have a solution for this other than the office space solution. I have a job. I wear a suit. I commute. I'm sure you guys have read about my commutes on the Twitters. Yeah. I don't get to have a lot of weird and wild fun, which is why when I come to events like this, I end up having too much weird and wild fun. Seth is snickering in the audience for a very, very good reason. I've decided over the past few weeks to just go ahead and embrace the crazy at work. And this is leading to all kinds of interesting things. I'm playing mind games with one of my boss's bosses by sometimes having pictures of my family out on my desk and sometimes not. Nice. I like that. I like that. I've also, and all of you really should try this, I've also started using a standing desk. The awesome part about using a standing desk in a cube environment is you are the prairie dog on patrol all day long. You can see what other people are doing. There are some lovely people who work in the building that I work in who are probably contractors who are never not Facebooking at work. And I love being able to stand there and watch them all day. For many of us, this is the single problem. We're at the point now where we've got this huge bubble of population that can't stop working. They all thought they were going to because they were running on real estate or mutual funds and they hadn't yet switched their asset down into something that's a little more safe and secure. And then we had Econopocalypse V1, and I think we're well on to Econopocalypse V2.0. It's not showing any real signs of going away. And you can see this as you know, if any of you are the traveling folk, the coasts are very different from the middle of the country. The middle of the United States is still seriously depressed. And what? Stop making fun of me from down there. Oh. It's not cool, a lot of stuff that's going on right now, and it means that a lot of people are gonna have to work way longer than they planned on. And when you look at it from, you know, the perspective of our grandparents, living to 65 or 67 was pretty awesome. Certainly all of my male relatives, that was pretty much the end of the road if they got that far. It's not quite the case for most of the female relatives. I'm gonna try and figure out how that happened exactly. But the reality for a lot of us, you know, people that are our age, are we don't have a real clear idea of when our working lives are going to end. We can certainly say it is not 65. It's either sometime quite sharply before that or quite long after that. So I'm on major career number 3 or 4, depending on how you count them. I have no idea what career number I'm going to be on by the time I'm 75, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to be working. And this has got to put a little bit of change in how we structure organizations, how we build succession planning, how we hire and fire according to keyword searches, for lack of a better way of putting it.
I just wanted to point out the seemingly negative connotation of the word work and what you're saying.
Sure. You know what? That's actually worth talking about. Maybe I could be a little more clear. You can tell me when I'm wrong. Work is that thing I do that enables me to do the things that I want to do. Sometimes I love my job. Sometimes my job is soul-sucking in a way that is undescribable. And that's been true of every job I've had since I got a paper route in grade 2. So yes, there are kinds of work that are drudgery, and there are kinds of work that are really awesome. Most of the work that I do that is really awesome, I don't get paid for. And like I said earlier, I got some people who are expecting a roof and electricity and Fruit Loops. Heat, yeah, from the Canada, you know. A lot of times you find out as you're going through this career progression thing that you missed a step somewhere along the way. Skipping happens, right? Skipping happens to many of, you know, sort of the people that we hang around with. It happened to us in school. We're sort of accustomed to it. And then you get to the point where some usually HR Chet looking son of a something is saying to you, well, you missed this one critical step 5, 10, in my case, more than 15 years ago. And until you make that up, we got you. So, you know, I managed to climb to the point where I was CISO for a mid-sized publicly traded financial institution with a college diploma in media art. Means I'm really, really, really good at making slideshows. You think I'm kidding. I have a diploma in slideshows. If I want to go much higher, I need, you know, an MBA or an MSc in IT, and that would all be great, except I don't have a bachelor's degree. And I was told by the school that I went to that none of my courses from them count. I said, even core English? And they said, yes, there have been significant changes. Apparently only Steve from Wichita knows this. He's my Dell support representative. We need to change the game. And a big part of changing the game goes exactly to the point that you just made. There's work and there's work. There's work that keeps you fed, keeps the clothes on your back, and there's work that keeps your soul from being crushed. Find a way to do both. And suck it up. I mean, I would love to be able to, honestly, I would love to make good Subway sandwiches, because you know what? Most of those artists don't even understand how to tessellate cheese properly. It's
the policy changed it so that they had to, but they don't tessellate cheese.
It's really, it's sad. I would love it if that was a life-supporting kind of job, because I could get an awful lot of thinking done while I'm assembling people's sandwiches, but I can't work for minimum wage because I have people who expect roofs and heat and electricity and Fruit Loops and Nintendo. It's not reasonable. And part of this means that I have to suck it up and work a job that I don't really like. I mean, I enjoy some days, but not every day. How many people like taking risks? How many people think of themselves as an activist? Yeah, most people are at the kinda range, right? So there's this guy that I used to work with that I consider a friend. And he takes real risks. Think about these questions. They're really kind of super duper important. How far are you willing to go to protect your rights? I know some people in this room have gone very far. They've done the kind of job that I'm not sure I'm willing to do, frankly. I don't know how hard I'd be willing to fight. Am I going to fight with a K-bar in my teeth and a gun in my hand? I don't know. That might not be me. Am I willing to lose everything? For the right fight, yes. For most fights, nah. I've got it good. I live in one of the best countries in the world. I live really close to another great country. Well, I can't see it from my house. So here's a story for you, because lots of people don't know this story. Byron Son is a reverse engineer, computer security specialist, other kinds of security specialists as well. But I first met him when he was reversing software. If you use a security product made by one of the 48 of the top 50 security product companies that uses signatures, and you depend on those signatures to keep any asset safe, you depend on work that Byron did. So he's not really a bad guy. He's a reverse engineer like many of us. You know, we've all, at one point or another, had to puzzle something out. Back just before the G20 summit in Toronto, which you might have seen pictures of burning cop cars and broken glass and stuff like that. He was arrested in the run-up as being a bomb-making terrorist. He was charged with a bunch of things, and he was put in jail. He was deemed too dangerous to let out twice. So since June 22nd of 2010, Byron's been in jail. He has yet to be convicted of anything. In fact, at the preliminary hearing, they threw out 5 of the 6 charges. They were left with only one. And interesting to note, differences between Canadian and US legal systems, the bar for can this charge proceed, you know, when the Crown is trying to get a charge through, is much, much lower in Canada than it is in the United States. If you use the United States test, the charge would be thrown out. The hardest part of the Byron story is that there's a publication ban in effect. Publication bans are serious business. If you violate a publication ban, you can expect to be held at the Queen's behest, which is a very polite way of saying in Commonwealth countries, we'll let you out when we feel like it. And they mean it. So I have to be really careful what I say because I know things that are under the publication ban. At the end of the preliminary hearing, February 22nd, yeah, that's a lot later than when he went in, they decided to keep one of the charges on a go-forward basis and they added another charge. And the other charge they added is interesting because if it were ever tested by a group of people like us, we would all be guilty of it. Summarily, there would be no argument. There's no way to make us not guilty of it. He's charged with counseling to commit an offense not committed. And that carries a 10-year jail sentence. What that means is if you tell someone, here's how to commit an offense, here's how to break something, here's how to get through the door of a house, you can be charged, whether or not they go through the door of a house ever. Yeah. Interesting kind of law to have on the books. I'm going to give you a hint. This country, not much different. The reality is that there are weird kinds of laws sprinkled all through our system of law. If you look at the Criminal Code of Canada, it is a big, fat book, and we are a small country compared to you guys. And we administer almost all of our criminal law at the federal level. You guys administer it all the way down to a sheriff that gets elected. It's a different kind of world when you think about it. In fact, I can't think of a single 7-year-old boy who has never counseled to commit an offense not committed. So he's got two charges going forward. They're hoping that the trial is going to be this fall, at which point he will have been held for more than a year in pretrial custody. The conditions of being held in pretrial custody are different than being in actual prison. You get much less time outside. You get much less freedom. For example, that front page article that I showed you was from Toronto Life. If you hunt around, you can find the link. The article goes public on Toronto Life's website in about 2 weeks because they're trying to sell magazines because they apparently want to make money. He can't have that article. He can't have a photocopy of it. He can't have those pages torn out of the magazine. He's not allowed to receive that magazine. Because one of the conditions of pretrial custody in Canada is you're not allowed to have a picture of yourself. And he's pictured in the article twice, and he's pictured on the front cover of the magazine. So, odd kind of world to live in. I would love to tell people about stuff that's under the publication ban, but I'm scared to death of going to jail. Because I have a family who likes their Fruit Loops. A lot of people think that this is not something that could happen. You know, this guy's a computer security researcher who essentially embarrassed the government. Canada spent $1.2 billion, with a B, dollars on a security apparatus to hold the G20 summit in the middle of downtown Toronto, adjacent to Skydome. People who are into baseball, adjacent to Toronto's Envy project. Toronto's anatomically correct if it had testicular cancer. This is like smack in the middle of downtown. This would be like holding the G20 summit in Central Park in New York. This would be like holding the G20 summit in the Loop in Chicago. This is fundamentally an insane place to put this thing. It's an uncontrollable area, which means you have to spend a crap ton of money, and they were spending it in ways that were very wasteful. They had things like CCTV cameras that were pointed at the wall. Like literally they were on their mounts backwards. And he exposed this, he publicized it. He put it on Twitter, he put it on Flickr, he put it on YouTube. He embarrassed the government. And he sits in a jail cell right now because he embarrassed the government. His parents have been funding his legal defense. He married into a wealthy family. He had a very nice house. When they bought their house 7 or 8 years ago, it was worth over 750 grand. He had a very nice life. He had a very nice wife. And he doesn't have any of that now. She's filed for separation, is going to divorce him, will not speak to him, even though one of the conditions of her bail, because guess what? She was arrested too. One of the conditions of her bail is she's not allowed to speak to him except through a lawyer. So people around you get arrested too. How nice is that? His parents have been footing his legal bills. They're up over 100 grand. Remember I said we've just gotten to the end of preliminary hearing. This is someone who's being persecuted by a first world government. He's one of us. Write him a letter. He's got all the books that he's allowed to have now. It only took a month or so. He's not allowed to have any more books. So he writes letters. He's allowed a 3-inch long golf pencil to write letters with. Be his pen pal. He is bored. Imagine yourself in a cell for 23¾ hours per day. And you've run out of books. He's read the Bible and the Quran cover to cover. He's bored. Write him a letter. Tell anyone who will listen. This is the case of a persecuted hacker. He embarrassed the government by pointing out where they were screwing up. He gave them a free security assessment. Just like, oh, I don't know, how many computer security companies can you name that will do that for you?
So where's the EFF?
We don't have that in Canada. Check again. Mm-hmm. Visit freebyron.org for more information. There's a lot there. I need you to really understand this. This happened in tolerant Canada. I mean, we're supposed to be like, you know, the Western Scandinavia. He was arrested on a trumped up papers, please. So people that are of my age or older remember laughing uproariously at a Canadian or American actor imitating a Russian demanding papers. Go back and watch movies from the early 80s. Papers, please. And we laughed at that. We thought, how could you live in a society that demands identification, that requires you to identify yourself just simply to move around? How many people have provided identification to move around to get, I don't know, here? Being critical of the powers that be will get you noticed. It took them a long time to notice him, but once they noticed him, the law says one thing, the reality is something else. There is this kind of extrajudicial punishment called, we'll get to you when we get to you. And in the meantime, you're just too dangerous to be let out. It happens. We lost count of the number of murderers and rapists who got bail since Byron was arrested, because it's more than I can count on my hands. And this guy took photographs and put them on Flickr and Twitter. He took video and put it on YouTube. Anybody in this room ever done things like that? Anybody in this room? Anybody in here ever assembled a potato gun? Or ever thought about it? Mm-hmm. Or has the instructions for how to do it in their house right now? Make magazine. Hackers are scary. It's easy to make a hacker into a scapegoat and vilify them in the media. This is serious stuff. Please think hard about all of it. And now I gotta race really, really, really fast. Presentation skills. Most of you think you're like this. Most of you, much more like this. And this is what you do to the people who come to your talks. Because you do crap like this. I want you to suck less. Conveying ideas is your entire stock in trade. If you can't write a brilliant document succinctly, if you can't deliver an idea quickly, like an elevator trip, 4 or 5 floors, you're not doing it right. get really comfortable with your material. You gotta be able to flip through this stuff backwards, forwards, upside down, tell a story, and make sure there's some sort of investment with the audience. Bring friends and family. That's what I do. I'm running out of time because the guy before me took too long. I don't want to run over because that pisses people off. Anybody heard about hackers lately?
No. Exactly.
There's this kind. Yeah. And there's this kind. DEF CON 18 Internet Wars panel. And yes, evidently the only shirt I own. Hackers and makers are kind of colliding right now. They're colliding in a very interesting way. It's really interesting, really awesome, and I think very, very good because it shows signs that we are a civilization that is unwilling to believe in magic. We want to understand highly advanced technology. Yeah, pretty much. How many people like coloring outside the lines? I love it. These are really good business-y kind of things, aren't they? This is the kind of thing you can put in a corporate PowerPoint slide and no one will argue with it. But being different is expensive. Some of us have been paying that price since high school. I paid it in the form of being locked in lockers. I'm sure many of you have cotton in places you never thought you'd ever have cotton. Conformity has some pretty high costs too. People who live in pop-up McMansions in suburbia are paying a different kind of price. I am trying to find balance. I've been trying to find balance for a long time, about 10 years. I've tried living in suburbia. That was entertaining. I don't live in suburbia now. I'm working really, really hard on figuring out who the heck I am. This is the midlife crisis, as it is called. I do not have a red sports car, although technically speaking, well, let's not tell them the secret yet. I have a vehicle that has the largest engine in its class. It is painted red. It has a sunroof. It has alloy wheels. It has leather seats. Technically, it can be a two-seater in certain configurations. Dodge Grand Caravan, stow and go, baby. In the two-seat configuration, it can't hold a bed. Yes, you're absolutely right. Not that that has ever happened and is ever likely to. I want people to think about your public persona. In public, are you a two-dimensional professional? Or are you more of a three-dimensional human? I wish I could hear the muttering. Yeah, sure. Are you fabricating your public persona?
Yeah.
Yep. Are you trying to maintain some similarity to your actual persona? I went through persona collision. I collided my real name with my not real name, and it was interesting. Think really hard about the cost of changing your public persona, because once it's out there, you can't fit that jello back into the cow bones. I think we're moving towards a reputation-based economy. At most security conferences and hacker conferences, I rarely pay for drinks because I won't stop talking. And some people value that. I have a reputation for not shutting up. I have a reputation for occasionally knowing what I'm talking about. There's a lot of value getting wrapped up in reputation, and it's going to be interesting watching what happens as the unerasable reputation follows you. My high school and university age years are not recorded anywhere because back then we didn't have the computers yet. I want everybody to read books because a lot of us have stopped reading books. No, Kindle is not a book. iPad is not a book. BlackBerry is not a book. Newspapers aren't books. Web pages aren't books. Read a book. Read a book that's older than you, because we're not the generation that's invented everything. There's stuff in there. Books can teach you things. They can teach you about how to teach other people. You can reinterpret old stories from the past and bring them forward and make them relevant. One guy figured out how to make a lot of money doing that and was later involved in a reverse takeover from another guy who wears a black turtleneck who likes to reinvent old stories. The important thing for us is it allows us to make predictions. I'm one of those people who is a science fiction fan. I expect at least one or two of the rest of you are. We've lived through science fiction turning into real life. I mean, the idea of a pocketable global communications device was impossible when I was born. And pretty much everybody in the room's got one in their pocket. That's pretty cool. So what came after that from science fiction? Cyberpunk? Anybody thinking that we're in a cyberpunk kind of world? Oh yeah, the space thing? Dude, I figured it out. Elon Musk is the smartest bastard I've come up with. Do you know why? Because I've been demanding a vacation on the moon since I was a young kid. He's figured out how to do it. By 2016, Elon Musk will be able to put himself on the moon if he can get his insurance company to let him, because he decided he wasn't going to wait for anyone to do it for him. Work these predictions through. Look at cyberpunk. I mean, cyberpunk was written in the late 80s, early 90s, right? And the immediate post-cyberpunk stuff, not Singularity and beyond, but the stuff where civilization is devolving and turning weird and getting polarized, and people who quit their job as a public servant, trying to get elected as a public servant, and in the meantime working for an entertainment company. It's a very strange world. We're seeing that balkanization thing start to happen. If you read some of the predictive news out there, there are people who are publishing articles that are being scholarly reviewed and seen as possible that the United States is headed towards a civil war, because politics is getting so polarized that it's going to be Democrat versus Republican in the street. It's a weird world we're living in. It's a world that's starting to include the notion of tribes. We're kind of a weird tribe, right? I mean, how many people are looking around going, hey, I know you. You've been to security conferences before, haven't you? You're one of them hacker types, aren't you? And we may well know each other, just have no idea what the other person looks like. And that's a world that we've been living in, some of us, for a long time. For me, it's more than 20 years. I know people who I've still never met. And I consider them amongst my best of friends, and I've never met them, and I have no expectation that I will. Think about how to take predictions and pull them forward into your work. Start thinking about what Neal Stephenson and William Gibson are doing with your tomorrow. And it's not distant tomorrow, it's tomorrow tomorrow. You can ask me anything as I manage to get this conference program back on time. I have 1 minute for questions. But I am going upstairs to the breakout room. You can find me on the internets in a bunch of different places. You've got time for your question if you go really, really fast.
Is there a way to get money to Byron anonymously?
Yes.
FreeByron.org?
No.
Me
or Seth. It's the easiest way. We take cash, small bills, non-sequential preferred, and the way the money is being dealt with right now, he has a trust account as part of the you're in prison thing, but that's more sort of his day-to-day play money. His parents have been footing the bills. They are extraordinarily proud people. They have never and likely will never ask for a dime. I think because of the nature of the fight, and when this goes to trial and all this stuff becomes public, Like, read the Toronto Life article. If you go back through my Twitter stream, you'll find it. I can't actually tell you to read it from there because it's a scanned copy. It's not legitimate, but when the legitimate article comes out in 2 weeks, or if you feel like violating the spirit of the law, or you want to physically see one, I have several copies I could loan you. Read the article to find out what's going on. I've got a little slip that tells you a lot of what's going on, but his parents have never asked for money, but it's our fight that he's fighting. It's the fight to do things like have acetone and peroxide in your house. It's a fight for a world where exposed wires and circuitry isn't seen as a bomb. I mean, it's hilarious to us, right? You know, some of my friends have been helpfully assembling my badge for me while I finished writing my slides. It's a box with exposed wires and a thing that looks like a computer. Oh my God, it's a bomb, it's gonna take out the building, right? As opposed to Seth, who has, that's a bomb. If not controlled correctly. You know, this is the world that we're living in because we've had, you know, the consistent dumbing of the Western world. Most people don't understand basic chemistry. I mean, think about how many people you could talk to and you could start walking them through the terrors of dihydrogen monoxide. There is this deadly chemical. It is all around you right now. Dihydrogen monoxide. If too much of it gets into your lungs, you will die. But you can't live without it. That's the kind of world we're living in, right? Where, you know, the stinger, I guess, the stay tuned for our news at 12, how dihydrogen monoxide is hurting your children. You know, that's not an unusual thing to have happen. I'm sure it has happened in some, you know, hick affiliate somewhere. So we need a world where bare wires and exposed circuitry aren't scary. We need a world where chemistry is reasonable. I mean, when I was a kid, I got a chemistry set that included this is how you make sparklers and fireworks. That chemistry set is a controlled item now. You need a license from the government. That's a scary, freaky world to live in. And I don't think our kids deserve it. And I don't think we should be okay with it. And we need to start fighting back. So hackerspaces, articles on the internet, telling people what's going on, thinking with your brain instead of thinking with your wallet or thinking with parts. This is the kind of world we can live in. Let's live in a better world, and why don't we be the activists that change it? Thanks. Stay tuned for propane and electrons, or how to get yourself an eyebrow transplant.